Welcome to the Eco News Report. My name is Tom Wheeler, and I am your host this week. I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Larry Glass, of the North Coast Environmental Center. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Tom, and also from Safe from Trinity County.
Yeah, and Safe from Trinity County. And thinking about our friends in Trinity County right now as the August complex is threatening homes and is just kind of a scary thing. And it's a great time for us to talk about fire, and we have a very special guest with us, Lenya Quinn Davidson. Lenya wears a lot of hats. She's a fire ecologist with the UC Cooperative Extension. She also works for the Fire Learning Network and supports community fire resilience, particularly coordinating the Fire Training Exchange Program, or TREX, as you may have seen it written in numerous news articles that have come out recently. And she is the director of the Northern California Prescribed Fire Council. Lenya, did I get all that right?
Yeah, that's great. I'm also a Trinity County kid, so I grew up in Hayfork.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Yeah. And we're thrilled to have you because fire is obviously a hot topic and on the front of a lot of people's minds right now. So, you know, I think I could recite some facts about what's going on, but I think a lot of people know what's going on. We have the largest fires in recorded California history going on right now, including some that are burning at the edge of Humboldt County, into Humboldt County, in Trinity County. We have the August complex, the Slater fire, a whole host of them. And so people are obviously scared. It seems that this year feels different than other years. This feels like a very extreme year. So let's try to get to the root cause of what's going on, and then we can transition to what we can do about it for the future. So these are being called mega fires by the media, by a lot of fire ecologists. They are California's forests burn regularly. They have burned throughout history. California's forests are fire adapted, but these appear larger than the historical norm, or at least the norm for the last 100 years. Lenya, just briefly, what's going on? Are these climate-driven events? Are these weather-driven events? Is it a combination of weather, climate, and fuel management or historic mismanagement? Why are we seeing such big fires this year?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it's not a simple answer. It's not a single cause. It's definitely a confluence of climate change, of past forest management, of fuels management, of fire suppression, of resource drawdowns, both statewide and nationally, you know, just not having enough resources, especially given that when the fires started in August, we had so many fires start across the state. And we were already at a kind of a drawdown nationally. So there weren't enough people to go to all the places that needed help. And that really contributed to what we have now, which is, you know, we're more than a month into this, but we're still dealing with all of that and still having those same issues. So it's really a confluence of all of those things and not just a single issue.
So yeah, it's a confluence of issues. It's multi-causal. I appreciate you pointing out that it's multi-causal because it seems that a lot of folks try to cherry pick the cause that fits their narrative best, whether, you know, it's the enviros and, you know, we like to blame climate change and weather, or it's the timber industry blaming a lack of forest management. You know, if we just cut more, there wouldn't be as much fuels. And, you know, we didn't historically see these when we managed, aka logged our national forests harder. So I appreciate the perspective. Let's drill down into some of these causes and we can evaluate them one by one and think about how they might be affecting us now. And let's start with climate change, because this has been brought up in the national conversation, including the first presidential debate, as a threat and as a contributor to the fires this year. So what is climate doing to make fires more extreme? So they burn hotter, or they burn larger and perhaps more common too?
Well, I think the main thing that we're seeing with climate, and it's been documented for some time, is that we are seeing an extended fire season in California and across the West. So, you know, fire season is starting earlier because of a lesser snowpack and less snow in general. And then it's extending farther into the fall because our fall precipitation is getting pushed back and back and back. And so we're getting a fire season that maybe used to be only a handful of months and is you know, in some years, several months more than the historical range. And we see that, you know, the Camp Fire, the Thomas Fire, some of these major fire events we've had in the last few years have been in the late fall, when typically we would have had more fall precipitation. So that's one of the big things. And then, of course, you know, having just the fuels having longer to dry out, a lot of tree mortality, and then also this kind of strange weather events. Lightning, like the lightning event that we saw in August, lightning's not uncommon in California. We always get lightning in the summer, but that event was a little unprecedented for its elevation and for the location that it was. So we don't know that that's directly climate change, but definitely some weird weather patterns that are contributing to this issue.
Right. Yeah. So weather can be influenced by climate change, but it's always hard to tease that apart. And weather is itself one of the drivers of these large fires. It seems that when the winds are blowing just right, we could have a pretty well-groomed forest stand exhibit fire behavior that we would never expect. So weather is certainly a component, and I'd love to dive into that. And weather, as you said, is also something that is influenced by climate change. So we don't know. It's hard, you know, to say any single weather event is affected by climate change, but we can look at broad trends in weather patterns. And that's how we can understand that, you know, storms are becoming more severe, or, you know, we are seeing generally hotter, drier weather, or wind patterns are shifting. So you're getting more blowing in from the east, as opposed to the cooler, moistier weather from the west. All sorts of things are changing as a result of climate change. So let's dive into weather and the role that weather has played in some of these large fires. High winds, how does wind affect fire behavior? You know, we've seen weather affect this year's fire season as well, and wind in particular as one of the important factors influencing fire intensity, fire behavior here. So what is it about the weather that drives some of these more extreme mega fires?
Well, in fire, we have what we call the fire behavior triangle. And the fire behavior triangle it's the three factors that influence fire behavior: fuels, weather, and topography. And so when we think about wind or humidity levels, things like that, that are the weather component of the fire behavior triangle, they're a huge part of how fire is going to burn. And we've been seeing that with these red flag warnings and then these dry east winds that we're getting that are, you know, they're winds coming from the east that are naturally going to be drier and hotter and then also strong. So they're essentially just fanning the flames of these fires, which we know how that works. I mean, anyone who's been around fire knows that when you put wind and oxygen on it, it burns better. So yeah, when we see these east wind events, we know. And even growing up as a kid in Hayfork, it's like, if you're in an area that is a fire-prone area, you're kind of clued into those east winds. And I think the fires in 1987 were east wind events. Yeah, it's just something you have to be tuned into. And I do think that as these fire seasons get more severe, people in California are getting a little more clued into red flag warnings and what that means, and that they should pay attention to that and kind of have that on their radar. If you're going to live in California, that's something to pay attention to.
In 87, it was more the abundance of lightning strikes. There were so many lightning strikes over such a wide area that there was just no way to deal with all those individual ignitions. And so that's what made 87 so challenging. The inversion set in pretty quick after all those starts, and the majority of the fire burned under the lid of the inversion. But this year we had an unusually early east wind event for their 40 days ago or whatnot. To have the east wind in at that time of year is premature. So this year the east wind event was earlier than normal. We usually have these into September, October. This one was at the end of August, which is unusual. Sometimes we have north wind events in August, but not east like it was. And the east ones are particularly devilish because there's just no humidity with them. The humidity drops down to single digits east of, you know, in eastern Trinity County. And when you have single-digit humidity, extremely hot temperatures, in July and August were almost record-breaking for the consistency of hot weather in Trinity County. ride all the fuels out beyond what you would normally expect those dry fuels to be like. And then you bring the east wind on it. And then a bunch of lightning strikes. You had a system move up, an old tropical depression move up from, you know, Baja California, come right through California, entering land around San Francisco Bay Area, and then just going right up the inland mountain range, and just lightning strikes all the way to the Oregon border down that corridor. So you had just fires everywhere. And whether they were forested land or not, I mean, the fires down by Napa were not forested lands. Those were grass fields and whatnot.
Yeah, and Larry, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's an important point that is often missed in a discussion about wildfire, which is, in the media, it's often portrayed as these are all forest fires and that the fires are killing the forest, right? So there are two problems with this. One, which is, if you look at California as a whole, perhaps not here in Northern California, but as a whole, the wildfires this year have burned more non-forested land than forested land. You know, it's burning grasslands, which are built to burn here in California. That's how we often prevent conifer encroachment and other things from taking over these prairies. And we have chaparral, which also has its own unique fire ecology. So, you know, if we're not careful, we can exaggerate the impacts of fires on our forests, because oftentimes these aren't forests. You know, the part of the August complex burned through some grasslands in a wilderness area in the Mendocino National Forest, and that was okay. That probably was helpful to those grasslands to continue to exist as grasslands. And then the second problem that I think that we often see in non-science writers writing about such a complex topic like fire is this assumption that fire kills everything. And fire can kill stuff. And perhaps what we're seeing is an increasing amount of high severity fire, which will kill the majority of trees in an area. But fire does often burn in a variety of severity patterns, from low severity, where it kind of creeps along the ground, to more moderate severity, where you do see some tree death, to high severity, where you see a pretty uniform tree death. Again, as we need to be careful about focusing on single causes for fires, because these are multi-causal events, we need to be careful about how we talk about fire so as not to overgeneralize the impact of fire. And fire is often good. Even these large fires often play a role in an ecosystem that is not bad for that ecosystem, right? California's forests are meant to burn even at high severity at times, right? So dead forests aren't necessarily bad. It might be, though, that we are just outside of this band that we would consider normal, or it is threatening communities. And certainly threatening communities is bad.
Good portion of the fire, to be clear, when the winds weren't blowing, this fire was doing some benefit, especially to the wilderness area. The problem is it just kept burning and burning and burning to the next wind event. And then the next wind event blew it right out of the wilderness area at people's homes. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
Things are too dry.
Welcome to the Eco News Report. We're talking fire ecology and fire behavior with Lenya Quinn Davidson from the UC Cooperative Extension. And so it seems like these large-scale fires are going to be here. You know, I think that we are entering a new normal. And so let's talk about how we can keep our communities safe. And as we saw with the Camp Fire, it's not necessarily just rural communities. We have large urban or suburban communities that also may be within areas that can burn and burn really hot and put human lives and structures at risk. This is part of the reason why I'm so thrilled to have Lenya as our guest today, because she works on these issues. Let's talk about one of these other parts of the fire behavior triangle, fuels. Lenya, can you introduce what prescribed burning is and what California and what we are doing here, particularly in Northern California, what we're doing to address fuels using prescribed burning?
Sure. Yeah, prescribed fire is definitely a big piece of this puzzle. And I think as we move forward and we really try to think about how we're going to coexist with fire, which, as you said, we're going to have to figure out because we're here and fire's here. And I think neither one is going away. So we really need to learn how to live with fire. And prescribed fire is going to be a really important tool for us, one of many tools. So prescribed fire is the use of fire under specific conditions to meet specific objectives that you've decided ahead of time. So it's highly planned use of fire. In Northern California, we have some really great examples of community-based models for prescribed fire. So, you know, in general, in the Western U.S., the biggest users of prescribed fire tend to be our federal agencies, National Park Service, the Forest Service, and the Fish and Wildlife Service. And then CAL FIRE has its own program as well that they're trying to reinvest in to do some more prescribed fire work. But then we also have these great models of communities kind of rising up to do prescribed fire themselves. And that's where I see a lot of promise as far as community protection and kind of more of the proactive side, because communities are the ones that are being threatened by these fires and that are really having to figure out solutions. And that's a lot of what I work on, prescribed fire training for communities. You mentioned TREKS earlier. That's something that I help lead at a national level. We have a lot of different partners across the country who are doing these kinds of events, including the folks in the Mid-Klamath, Will Harling and all of his, Bill Tripp and all their partners in the Mid-Klamath who do great work around prescribed fire. And then in Humboldt County, we also have the Humboldt County Prescribed Burn Association, which is a group that my colleague and I helped form in 2018, which is really about getting community members more involved. And it's essentially a community cooperative for prescribed fire so that we can be doing more of our own projects on private lands and not waiting around for our agency partners to do it for us.
So you gave me so many good topics there that we could unpack. Let's talk briefly about some of these folks who are doing it well. We have Will Harling and MCWIC, the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council. There we go. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with using a great acronym like MCWIC, is that you forget what it all stands for. But yeah, Mid-Klamath Watershed Council and the Creek Tribe and Bill Tripp with the Creek Tribe. Can you talk a little bit about how they are using fire, and particularly this restoration of tribal fire management to protect those rural communities along the Klamath River?
They are a great example of really visionary work. I think one of the things that's missing in California around fire and around prescribed fire is really this idea that we should have a vision about where we're trying to go with our programs. And I really feel like the folks in the Mid-Klamath have a strong vision of a future with fire that includes wildfires being able to burn on the larger landscape and the community being able to coexist with that. So their work really focuses on treating private lands, because, you know, they're much like where I grew up. The communities out there are just surrounded by national forest land. And so they're at the mercy of whatever's happening on the national forest. And they've been able to take prescribed fire and bring it back into their toolbox, along with a lot of other, you know, they're taking a lot of different approaches. Prescribed fire is one of the tools they're using, but they're trying to bolster the capacity of the community and of the tribes out there to do prescribed fire work and protect the values that they really care about, which includes, of course, the community and cultural sites and, you know, important forest stands and things like that, and to make those areas more resilient so that wildfire can play a role again in a way that works for the community. So I'm just constantly inspired by the work those folks are doing out there. And the tribal people in that area are really trying to bring prescribed fire back as a cultural practice. Of course, they have thousands and thousands of years of knowledge and wisdom around fire that kind of got taken away from them in recent past. And so TREKS has been an important tool for them to train folks and to bring fire back as a cultural practice. So there are a lot of people, including Bill Tripp with the Karuk Tribe and Margot Robbins, who leads up the Cultural Fire Management Council, who are just doing really impressive work in this area.
And that's great you brought that up, because the cultural difference is the big hurdle that we have to jump. Because if you look at what MCWIC's doing, and then you take that over to Hay Fork, where I know you used to live, you've got this completely backwards cultural thing where fire brings on hysteria and They don't want anything to do with it. How do you propose that we get past the sort of Anglo culture fear of fire and get back to bringing it on the landscape?
Yeah, that's a great question. And definitely is a different culture in Trinity County around fire. But I do think people are ready for solutions. And there's some inspiring work going on in the Hayfork area as well with the Watershed Research and Training Center. And they just hired two new people to lead up their fire management program for the Watershed Center. And those folks come out of the Trek background, really into community-based fires. So I think we're going to see a lot more opportunity, and just getting people out and getting people involved is going to be the best way to break down some of those challenges and some of those barriers, I think. And that's what we've been doing in Humboldt County, is really trying to engage the community. I mean, I think in Hayfork, so much of the problem has been like this trust issue with the Forest Service. And again, you have this community that is surrounded by national forests, and there's this real divide culturally between the top-down kind of Forest Service approach and then the small town. And it's time to break down some of those barriers and get people actually engaged and feeling like they matter in the conversation.
And a lot of this work is being done in communities by developing their own community wildfire plans, where folks can sit down with agencies and sit down as a community to figure out what is the wildfire approach that makes sense for us. It may be a combination of different things. So it could be prescribed burns together with other types of fuel breaks. So it's inspiring to see these plans come together. I also want to make sure that we get to the topic of what folks can do to help protect themselves and their property in case of fire. As you said, it is a fire behavior triangle. Fuels, topography, and weather are the three things that primarily influence fire behavior. So there are times when you can do the best job possible in managing your fuels, right? To use the Trump expression, you can rake the forest clean of your fuels, and the weather still is not cooperating. The topography is still not cooperating. So let's talk about home hardening and other things that matter to save structures and to save lives. So bug out plans and redundancy in things like road access to rural communities to get folks out in case of an evacuation order. So when someone says home hardening, if this is an unfamiliar term for people, what does that mean?
Well, it's interesting. So when we think about the fuels component, we often don't realize that our houses are some of the most available fuels on the landscape. You know, these are dry buildings that are often built of flammable materials. And when people picture a house burning down, they kind of picture like a flaming front blazing over the house and the house burning to the ground. But that's actually not how most houses burn. We know that most houses burn from ember wash. So, you know, the fire is burning somewhere nearby and it's raining down embers that get into your vents, that go onto the wood pile that's stacked against your house, that land in the bark mulch that's directly adjacent to the base of your house. That is how most houses burn. Of course, there are exceptions to that, but you've probably seen that imagery of like a neighborhood where every other house is burned to the ground and then some of them are standing and like the trees are all still green. And it's like, how did that happen? But home hardening is the idea that you can do things to make your house more resilient to embers and to a flaming front if that were to occur. But it's really focusing on all these micro things you can do, you know, directly in and around your house that make it more resilient to fire. So if you start looking around, you might notice that, yeah, you have bark mulch that surrounds your house. I do on the front side of my house in Arcata. And that's a real problem. If you live in an area that has any kind of tendency toward fire, you do not want bark mulch or any kind of flammable material within, you know, the first few feet of your house. You also can replace the vents on your house to be a finer mesh. And that can prevent embers from going into your vents and landing in your attic or you know, wherever your vents are. You definitely do not want to pile flammable things against your house. So, you know, when I was a kid, we did have a wood pile on the porch, stacked on the porch against our house. And that's not a good idea either. So there are just a lot of things like that. We have some great materials on our Cooperative Extension website. So if you look up the University of California Cooperative Extension Humboldt County website, you can link to some really great materials about home hardening.
And one interesting one that I learned recently was the importance of just cleaning your gutters. So if you have an accumulation of organic matter in your gutter, that can be enough to catch a fire that will ultimately take out your house. So it can seem a bit daunting at first. Am I going to have to replace my roof with a metal roof and everything else? Take steps. Take whatever steps you can. Replace the mesh in your attic. A pretty easy thing to do, you know, just a quick trip to Pearson's, get the fine mesh. It's not going to be terribly expensive. Clean your gutters, rake away the mulch, as you said, from near your house. The chance that your house is going to make it through a fire is going to increase.
Yeah, it can have a huge impact in that way. If you just kind of walk around your house and look at your house and envision yourself being a flaming ember landing on things, and that can help you think about what you might need to do in advance of fire season or during fire season right now. It's not too late.
So Lenya, have we missed anything important in this fire discussion that should be talked about? Or do you have any last thoughts for our listeners about what they can do to be safe both during this fire season and in future fire seasons?
I think it's just important to, you know, I think we talked about a lot of different things that you can get involved in. I think it's important to not become so overwhelmed with the debates around climate and fuels management that you become disempowered yourself, because there are things that we can do that we talked about. And here in the North Coast, we live in a really great area. We have really inspiring models of prescribed fire. If you want to get involved in prescribed fire and you live in Humboldt, Trinity, or Siskiyou counties or Mendocino County, you can get involved. So there's a website that we have called calpba.org, and that lists all these community-based prescribed fire groups that are starting up. And normal people like you and me can get involved in these groups and learn more about prescribed fire. But if you're not interested in that, definitely the home hardening piece, learn about that, look up those resources, and just start making some small steps toward making your place more resilient. Also, just keep in mind that as we move forward, we have a future with fire. So we just have to stay positive and work together on this. And I think that's just an important thing to keep in mind.
Larry, any last thoughts from you? And for folks listening at home, Larry's on the front lines of fires right now. He has his property out in Trinity County, is close to the August complex. So you, I'm sure, are thinking about fires more than just about any person out there these days.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's nothing new to me, but this is a more catastrophic situation. And I feel very powerless right now to do much of anything. I had to evacuate. You know, like Cecil was just saying, you know, you need to harden your house. I've been working on that for a while. A long way to go. I built the house back in the 70s when the idea of wildfires coming around there was pretty remote. So I built it with all the wrong materials. It's all nice wood house. I have been gradually converting over to hardy plank, all of that sort of thing, and trying to get a metal roof on. But that's a big job when you're working by yourself in the middle of nowhere. But I think I have real good feeling about the communities trying to work together to do more controlled fire. I think that's going to be the ticket. We've been working on roadside shaded fuel breaks in Trinity County, and burning them after we create them is a really key part of that plan.
And I just want to give a shout out to some legislation that's going through the federal legislature right now, introduced by our own local Representative Huffman and Senator Harris, that would provide additional funding for folks who are looking to do things like home hardening and community wildfire protection. So if you are feeling so inspired, sending a thank you message to either Senator Harris or Representative Huffman would be great. All right. This has been another issue of the Eco News Report. I'd really like to thank our guest, Lenya Quinn Davidson, for joining us today. Thank you so much. And Lenya, if you want to direct people to some resources, where should they go online?
I think a great place to start is our UC Cooperative Extension website, both the Humboldt County one, and we have a UCANR fire website. That website has a great fire activity map that I've been finding to be one of the best publicly available maps for fire information. So go check that out. Just Google UCANR fire. And then that calpba.org website is a great one for community-based prescribed fire and just learning more about prescribed fire. Also, the Northern California Prescribed Fire Council, we have a Facebook page, so I share a lot of things there, and so does the Humboldt County Prescribed Burn Association. So go ahead and look those up, and you can link to a lot of great articles about prescribed fire.
Great.
Cool. Okay, great.
Thank you, Lenya. See ya.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye. And thank you, Larry. I really appreciate you making it out here, Larry. I can imagine that your brain is on other things right now. So it was great to have you on and to have your voice as someone who has property out in the WUI. Well, I hope everyone is staying safe out there. Thank you to all the firefighters out on the front lines. And join us again next week for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.